Okay, so we're diving into Computer Network Limited versus Purcell Tire and Rubber Company. This case really gets into how courts look at agreements, especially when you're talking about selling goods under the UCC. And I mean, this is like bread and butter stuff for any future lawyer out there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this
Yeah.
case, it comes out of the Missouri Court of Appeals back in 1988, and it really shows how the UCC plays out in like real life business disputes. You know,
Yeah.
it's not just some theoretical thing. It's really how those theories are applied, you know.
Right, like this is boots on the ground UCC.
Exactly.
And that's what makes this deep dive so interesting, right? We've got all the nitty-gritty details, you know, the what happened, arguments back and forth, and then the court's decision. So we're going to try to pull out those key takeaways, those light bulb moments, so you can really get those core principles without getting bogged down, you know, in all the legal jargon.
Yeah, the goal is to understand what the court was really zeroing in on and why, like, what convinced them that there was a contract and what arguments just didn't stick. You know, that's where the real learning's going to happen.
Yeah, and hopefully we can, you know, share that with our listeners as well.
For sure.
So let's jump right in with the initial agreement.
Okay.
So Computer Network Limited agreed to sell Purcell Tire and Rubber Company 21 IBM personal computers.
Okay.
It seems pretty straightforward, like on its face, just, you know, buying and selling computers.
Right. But that's really where the whole dispute hinges on, you know, did Purcell really intend to buy that many computers?
Ah, so that's the rub.
Yeah.
So this agreement was all laid out in a letter
Okay.
dated February 23, 1985. So just this one single piece of paper really sets off this whole chain of events.
Wow.
Kind of makes you think twice about, you know, what you signed.
Yeah, the power of a signature, right?
Exactly. And the letter was signed by Harry F. Chapman Purcell's controller. So this isn't just some, you know, sales rep. This is a financial guy high up in the company. Does that like legally make a
Oh,
difference?
it totally does. When you've got someone like a controller
Yeah.
signing on the dotted line, it really reinforces the idea that the company as a whole was on board with that agreement.
Because they should know better,
Yeah,
basically.
exactly. Their position suggests that they're authorized to make those kinds of deals and they understand the implications.
They're not just some, you know, low-level employee who doesn't know what they're doing.
All
So the
right.
letter, it spelled out, you know, all the key things, 21 computers, the price tag for each one, and when they'd be delivered. So on paper, it looks like a pretty standard, you know, typical sales agreement.
Yeah, exactly. And those are the elements that the UCC considers essential for a contract for the sale of goods. So having all that laid out in writing makes it a lot harder to argue later that, oh, there was no agreement.
Right, so then what happened? I mean, we know there was a dispute, so.
Well, here's the thing. Purcell, they went ahead and bought nine of those computers and even paid for them.
Oh, so they acknowledged something was going on.
Exactly. This is what's called partial performance. It's a big deal under the UCC. It really suggests that Purcell, at least initially, believed there was a contract and they were acting accordingly.
So they're on board at first,
Seems like it.
but then they hit the brakes.
Yep. They refused to accept the remaining 12 computers, and that's where things went sideways.
What was their reasoning? Like, what was their excuse for backing out?
Well, basically, they claimed they never meant to be locked into buying all 21 computers. They said their internal understanding was different, even though the letter clearly stated that quantity.
So they're saying, yeah, we signed it, but we didn't mean it like that.
Right.
Okay, so Computer Network feeling like, you know, hey, we had a deal here. They sued for breach of contract, right?
Yeah.
They wanted to get paid for those 12 computers that Purcell wouldn't take.
Exactly. They argued that Purcell was legally obligated to follow through on the agreement, take those computers, and pay up.
Makes sense.
So the case went to trial, and the trial court actually sided with Computer Network, awarding them over $24,000 in damages.
24 grand, that probably represents, you know, their lost profits on those 12 computers, right?
Most likely, that's usually how damages are calculated in breach of contract cases. They try to put the non-breaching party in the same financial position they'd be in if the contract had been fulfilled.
Okay, so Purcell loses the appeal, hoping that the Missouri Court of Appeals will see things their way.
Right. They're basically asking the higher court to take another look at the trial court's interpretation of the facts and the law, particularly whether a binding contract actually existed.
So that leads us to, I think, the big legal question here. Was there even a valid contract formed in the first place?
That's the million-dollar question, right? If there was no contract, Purcell couldn't have breached it. So the court had to figure out if all the necessary elements for a contract under the UCC were there.
Okay, and the appellate court, they agreed with the trial court's finding that a valid contract did exist, and they pointed to UCC section 2204. So what's so special about this section?
This section is kind of the bedrock of how commercial contracts are formed. It basically says A contract for the sale of goods doesn't have to be super formal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be made in any way that shows agreement, even if some details are left open. The key is whether there's a clear way to figure out a remedy if things go wrong, and if the parties showed they intended to be bound by an agreement.
So even if every single little detail isn't spelled out in advance, although in this case we had the quantity, the price, the delivery, it seemed pretty clear cut.
Yeah.
But even if it wasn't, there can still be a contract, as long as the overall picture shows the parties wanted to make a deal.
Exactly. The UCC is a lot more flexible and practical than traditional common law. It focuses on the reality of how business is done, you know.
So, and the court saw that signed letter with all the details about the computers, the price, the delivery, all that, as pretty strong evidence that they intended to make a contract, right?
Absolutely. A written agreement, especially one with key terms like those, is really persuasive evidence. It creates a clear record of what they understood when they made the deal.
So this brings us to this idea of objective assent. The court didn't care about what Purcell was thinking secretly. You know, internally, they focused on what they actually did by signing that letter. So break it down for us. What does objective assent really mean in contract law?
Sure. Objective assent basically means that when a court's trying to figure out if there was an agreement, they look at what the parties said and did from the viewpoint of a reasonable outsider. So what would a reasonable person conclude based on their actions?
It's not about what you're secretly thinking. It's about what you show the world.
Right, exactly. It's about what you communicate to the other party. Contract law focuses on enforcing those outward agreements, not trying to read minds.
So even if Purcell had internal memos saying something different, the fact that they signed that letter means the law will treat them as if they agreed to it?
Precise.
And that signature on the letter basically created a legal presumption that they agreed to all those terms. And it's got to be pretty tough to argue that you didn't agree to something that you signed, right?
It's a steep uphill battle. The signature is like a formal seal of approval. And if you're trying to say, no, I didn't mean it, you've got a lot of convincing to do.
And the fact that it was the controller signing probably made a big difference, right? I mean, someone in that position is expected to know what they're signing.
Oh, yeah. The court expects someone like that to understand contracts and the legal weight of their signature.
It's not like they can play dumb.
Exactly.
So let's move on to the next legal issue, the parole evidence rule. Now, Purcell tried to bring in testimony. That's what parole evidence is. It's like outside evidence stuff that wasn't in the actual written contract. And they were trying to argue that they didn't really intend to buy all 21 computers. So fill us in on this rule. What's the deal with parole evidence?
So the parole evidence rule basically says you can't bring in evidence of other agreements or conversations that happened before or at the same time as the written contract if it contradicts what's in the written contract.
Oh, so it's like what's written down is what matters.
Right. It's about making sure that written contracts are reliable and stable.
But the court said parole evidence could be used to decide if a contract even existed at all, but not to change the terms of a contract that was already clear and in writing.
Exactly. That's a key distinction. The rule doesn't stop you from showing that there was never a real agreement in the first place, like if there was fraud or a mistake.
Mm.
But once the court decides there's a valid written contract, you generally can't use outside evidence to mess with what it says.
So the written contract is king unless there's something fishy going on.
Right.
And this connects to what's called the Four Corners Doctrine, which is basically the idea that if a written agreement is complete and clear, then that's all the court needs to look at.
Exactly. They shouldn't need to go digging for outside evidence
mm-hmm.
unless there's something unclear within the contract itself.
Makes sense. So the next legal issue was about the course of performance. Purcell actually accepted and paid for those first 9 computers. So how did the court look at that?
Well, the court saw that as a pretty big deal under the UCC. How the parties act after they make an agreement can really show how they understood the terms. You know, it's about looking at the deal in action.
So it's like their actions spoke louder than their words.
Yeah.
And under UCC section 2208, this course of performance, what they did after the agreement can show what they thought the contract meant.
Right. It can be strong evidence of their intent if they act in a way that fits with a certain understanding of the contract. It's like their actions after signing that letter back up what they seemed to agree to originally.
And the court, they even had this great quote. They said, "Tell me what you have done under a deed and I'll tell you what the deed means."
That's a classic line.
It really gets at the heart of it. Actions matter more than words, especially when you're arguing about what was agreed to.
Absolutely.
So wrapping it all up, what's the big takeaway here for our listeners, especially those future lawyers out there?
The big lesson here is that under the UCC, what you do is way more important than what you say you intended, signing a clear written agreement. especially one that spells out the important stuff like quantity, price, delivery, that holds a lot of weight, and your actions after the agreement, your course of performance, can really back that up. You can't just rely on unexpressed intentions or secret understandings.
And it's worth remembering that the UCC is a bit more flexible than traditional common law about how contracts are formed. It doesn't require every single detail to be ironed out in advance, as long as there's a way to fix things if one party breaches and there's a clear intention to be bound by an agreement.
Right. It's about acknowledging the realities of business and focusing on whether the parties really meant to make a deal.
So what's one practical piece of advice someone can take away from this case before they go out and make business deals?
I'd say the most important thing is to always get those key terms of your agreement down in writing clearly, without any room for interpretation. If Purcell wanted the option to buy less than 21 computers, they should have said that clearly in the letter, maybe by using a range like up to 21 computers, or by including some conditions or options.
Don't leave any wiggle room.
Exactly. Vague language is just asking for trouble.
So for our listeners, what's the bottom line here? This case really shows why having those clear documents is so crucial, and why the objective theory of contracts matters in real life as you go through law school. Keep in mind that in the world of commercial law, what you do often speaks louder than what you say you meant, especially when there's a signed agreement involved.
Absolutely. It highlights how important it is to be super careful when you're drafting any kind of business agreement, and to understand how the court looks at objective evidence and interprets contracts. Those are fundamental principles that will be valuable throughout your legal careers.
Here's a final thought to ponder. What if that letter had some tiny little ambiguity, like maybe a typo in the product code or a vague statement about the delivery date? How might that have changed the court's analysis of objective assent? And even more importantly, the parole evidence rule. Think about how even small errors in drafting can open the door to different interpretations and maybe even change the outcome of the whole case.
That's a great point to think about. Even a tiny ambiguity can let parties bring in outside evidence to try to explain what they thought the contract meant. It really shows how important it is to be precise and clear in every single part of a contract.
Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Computer Network Limited versus Purcell Tire and Rubber Company. Hopefully this gave you a better grasp of how contracts are formed under the UCC and why objective evidence is so important when determining if an agreement exists and what it means. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll catch you next time.
See you then.